Women's cricket is on at the moment and it is more popular than ever before. That's thanks in no small part to one of the sport's pioneers and legends. Alex Blackwell has represented Australia hundreds of times in cricket at Test, T20 and One Day Internationals. She's also been an outspoken advocate for female, gay and transgender players. After 30 years of winning on and off the cricket pitch, Alex has written a memoir reflecting on how much things have changed and how much there still is to do. The memoir is called Fair Game. Alex Blackwell, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you, Hilary. It's wonderful to be here.
Great to have you with us. Alex, when you grew up, it was still pretty rare to see girls down at the local cricket pitch. When did you first come to the sport?
Yeah, I grew up one of four girls. My mum and dad weren't into cricket. They learnt to love it, maybe hate it too sometimes watching, because you have more bad days than good out there, and I'm sure it's hard to watch your child come off disappointed. But growing up in the country, especially with Kate, my twin sister, I always had a buddy to play sports with in the backyard. And yeah, very vivid memories playing backyard cricket at my grandparents' farm. And yeah, it was lovely to reminisce about, you know, the magic of the game, getting into it as a kid and being able to document that in my book.
Yes, you talk about the magic of the equipment and, looking through catalogues, we're going to get those pads, we're going to get that ball. And the day you went from shorts to culottes, why was that important?
Yeah, that's right. It's it was a step up going from playing cricket in little shorts as kids. Again, Kate and I would play against the boys in our local town, and there weren't any other girls playing at that time. But when we stepped up to play cricket in girls' teams, so the New South Wales under-17s rep team, we played in long socks and culottes, and that was the attire of the Australian women's team at the time. Terrible for sunburn. You get the terrible sock tan, especially behind your knees. And I mean, some people listening might not even know what culottes are. They're kind of these sort of flowy shorts that could be mistaken for a skirt, but terrible for sliding in the rough outfield sometimes. You'd get grazes and sunburn. So yeah, that is in the past now, but I wouldn't mind seeing a retro round in the WBBL perhaps, where we go back to wearing these fancy culottes and colourful attire and pay tribute to the generations gone by.
Well, and you talk about some of the allies that kind of stepped up and said, hey, you know, girls can play cricket too at various points along the way. And a difficult time for you and Kate when you were still quite young with sledging. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, as I said, Kate and I were the only girls in town playing cricket with the boys. And the boys hadn't really sort of experienced that before. And I guess that it was sort of a natural thing at the time to sort of snicker a little bit because we were different. They hadn't seen this before. And, we did get a bit of a rough time. And in cricket, because it's somewhat of an individual sport within a team sport, you have a lot of focused attention on you, especially when you're batting. And so as little girls, we did get a lot of sledging, and we decided we didn't like it, and we actually quit cricket. Probably around aged 10, we quit and thought, no, we'll just continue playing soccer because you don't get the same sort of attention, even though we were playing in mostly boys-only competitions. But, it did drive us away from the game, and unfortunately.
Well, and luckily you came back after a bit of a break.
Yeah, that's right. Fortunately, Mr. Cook from Griffith East Public School saw a bit of talent in the girls' cohort at the school in year six and started the girls' cricket team for the first time. And once we joined back into that team, we realised we loved the game, and I didn't miss a season after that time until retirement. So thanks to Mr. Cook, because I think really that cricket is our true love, even though we played lots and lots of different sports.
Yeah, and you're right about having to sit down and seriously think one day, do I keep up with the javelin? Do I go for soccer, or do I look at all the skills involved in cricket and go for that? But it's interesting, isn't it? Because you can see how a lot of girls would go, well, I'm not going to stick with this game if I'm going to be discredited and sledged by parents and opposition as well. What are some of the remaining barriers, do you think, Alex Blackwell, to keeping girls interested, getting them interested in cricket and keeping them interested in cricket that parents and clubs and teachers and the rest of us can help to break down still?
Well, it's wonderful now, Hilary, that the number one paid sport for women in terms of team sport is cricket. And I think that is a wonderful thing to aspire to be able to create a livelihood within the sport that you love, whether that be as an elite player, even if you're a domestic cricketer. Domestic cricket for women is now professional, but reaching the high echelons of the game, playing for Australia, you'll be amongst the top paid female sports in this country for team sports. Look, I think it's no longer a shock to see young girls down at the nets with their dads or their mums, because it's become such a popular sport. Of every 10 new participants, 6 are in fact girls. So, in fact, we need to start thinking about how do we keep our young boys interested as well? I think the junior formats being shortened, sort of modified games, and making sure that the pitch length is the right length for the young children, because in the past, we used to have kids playing on full-length pitches with full-size cricket balls, and, you know, it just doesn't work. It drives away kids because their enjoyment of the game isn't as high as it could be. So those modified formats, I think, have benefited boys and girls. And my hero, Belinda Clark, who captained Australia, a legend of our game, she actually was really instrumental in bringing the junior formats modifications in. It's been a huge success.
When we talked a bit before about your twin sister, Kate, and you write about how it was wonderful always having her there. You always had a playmate, you always had a cricket buddy, and the relationship, I understand, was fairly competitive. What's it been like for you having her there as part of your cricket journey and, I guess, going on to succeed in a way that she hasn't?
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the themes throughout the book, you know, being a female in a male-dominated sport, but also growing up to be the individual I am, and to do that alongside an identical twin sister. I think it's very, very special to be an identical twin. I don't know what it's like to not be an identical twin, but there have been challenges. Although we're the bestest friends and biggest supporters of each other, we did compete for similar roles within the New South Wales and the Australian women's cricket team. And so sometimes if it wasn't me playing, it was Kate taking that spot or vice versa. So it was challenging. I think ultimately we just wanted to be there together, and we did get that wonderful experience of playing cricket together in the Australian cricket team in 2004 in India. Taking the field in the green and gold together was an incredible moment, and it's a record that can never be taken away from us, because we became the first identical twins to play cricket for Australia at that time. And the Waugh brothers, our heroes as kids, they were non-identical twins. So it was a really special moment. Perhaps having someone who was equally as competitive, it sort of drives you to be better. And it was great that we had each other to train with in our backyard. And Dad even put a cricket net up in the backyard, which was fantastic. And one day I was bowling to Kate and I broke her big toe with a really good Yorker, and unfortunately that meant that I got picked for the New South Wales team, and we were playing WA, and she unfortunately missed out due to injury. I swear it was not deliberate, but
I bet it still comes up at Christmas dinner. We're speaking with Alex Blackwell. She's a former international cricketer, played a lot of games, very highly regarded in the sport, and she's got a memoir out. It's called Fair Game, and it covers a lot of ground, literally and metaphorically, about her time in the game and some of the amazing experiences there as a female player, as a lesbian player, and some of the changes that have happened in the sport over that time. And Alex, really interesting to read recently that a lot of the research, when we talk about reasons why girls do or don't play particular sports, the research is saying that women and girls of various sexualities sometimes avoid sports because they don't want people to think that they're gay. Mm. What can be done about that?
Well, I think that is right. I think in the past, people have feared being labelled as gay, and that's due to growing up in a society that tells you in sort of subliminal ways, or, you know, subtle messages, that being gay is less than, and not worthy of celebration if you happen to be gay and in a cricket team. But I think that's definitely changed. I think nowadays young people see sexuality differently to the generations gone by, and there's a lot more fluidity in the way that people look at sexuality and experience it. So I think that's changed now. I think girls and boys pick the sports and the activities that they enjoy, and they're less pigeonholed in terms of gender roles and what's appropriate for males and females. I think also, you know, one thing I'm very proud of is ensuring that sport is open and available to diverse genders and sexualities. So not everyone is born strictly on the male or female end of the gender spectrum and biological sex. So I'm talking about intersex people. And in fact, in my other life as a genetic counsellor, that's one of my real areas of interest. It's a small number of people, 1 in 4,500 people have an intersex variation, but you know, they exist, and I think we need to be ensuring that sport is open to all types of people, and even those who identify as non-binary or transgender. And I think that is one of our modern day challenges for sport, allowing access to our increasingly diverse younger population.
Yeah, and a younger population who don't seem to struggle as much as perhaps some of the older population do with that idea of nuance and diversity and shifting, changing gender identities. And, you know, obviously older populations are diverse too, and some people have no problems at all. But Alex, that assumption that women's sport is largely the domain of lesbians has had some pretty awful effects for some players. How does that homophobia, or how has it manifested in women's cricket?
Yeah, so in the book I do describe what it was like for me growing up in a male-dominated and homophobic environment. We know that sport remains one of the pockets of our society, that there's a lot of work to be done to ensure homophobia is a thing of the past. We've done great things to move the conversation around racism. That's not completed yet, though, is it? We can still do more in that regard. But I think homophobia is still fairly common. When you look on the Out on the Field study that was done in 2014, over 6,000 participants from all around the world participated in a study, both gay and straight people involved in sport, and 80% have witnessed or experienced homophobia in sport. And that's simply not good enough. When we think about how positive sport is for our physical and mental health, it's a real target, I think, an opportunity for sports to ensure that we're not rejecting a large proportion of our population. So potentially 11% of Australians, but actually probably more than that. with emerging data suggesting that our younger people are increasingly identifying as non-heterosexual, or not completely in that regard. So, yeah, it's a big opportunity for sports, and I do document what it was like to experience homophobia and to stand up to our leaders and administrators of cricket to say, well, look, this isn't good enough. I believe I'm worthy and equal as compared to anyone else, and being gay doesn't change any of that, in my opinion. And I think we need to do better at celebrating the people who have contributed to our sport. And yes, there have been a number of gay athletes in cricket, and sadly, I'm the first one to talk publicly about it. And I think that's, you know, not something I set out to do, but I'm pleased to be representing people of the past who were not able to speak freely and enjoy the freedoms that we do today.
And there's been some pretty amazing moments chronicled in that journey. Alex Blackwell, people saying things like, we want to make women's cricket a place mothers would want to bring their daughters, with the implications that having too many lesbians around is bad for that. Bad luck if you're a lesbian mother. And one incredible moment when you were on the Cricket New South Wales board speaking with Eddie Maguire, and he claimed there was predatory behaviour among lesbian players. How did that moment strike you at the time?
It's a wonderful story in the book, and one of my favourite moments actually of my cricketing journey, because at that time when Eddie raised his point of view that predatory behaviour was something to address in AFLW, you know, I think I handled it in a mature way, because who am I to say that, you know, there aren't behavioural issues? I think we need to educate all people involved in sport about proper workplace behaviour. But I did feel like he unfairly targeted or profiled a type of person, you know, a group of people that I belong to, and I found it rather offensive. But being able to sit with him and explore what he, you know, what he really meant around that, and draw the conversation towards a more productive tone, which is about focusing on workplace behaviour for everybody. Certainly the AFL, the men's sport, has a lot of work to do as well. So, yeah, I thought it was not quite the right choice of language, and but respect to him, he stayed in the conversation, and we enjoyed a back and forth, which you would at the level of being a director in a sport. You need to be able to take on other people's opinions, and I feel like he did, and I certainly took on his view as well. But, yeah, I think we have to also look at the reality of what's happening within sports, and not just what a perception might be. And I think, unfortunately, there's a perception when people look at the AFLW, because they're very physical women, strong, tattooed, short haircuts, that in some way signals what type of behaviour that person would display, whether that be in the locker room or off the field. And I think that's particularly unfair. You cannot judge someone by their looks, or by their sexuality. It's by their actions, and anyone can step out of line, and I don't think it's necessarily fair to target one type of person to start addressing workplace behaviour.
Well, and we talked a lot, Alex Blackwell, about the attitudes that have been in and around women's cricket, and you write a lot about how they're changing, and you write with great excitement and enthusiasm about the opportunities, as you say, for moving forward and making change. Let's have a look, though, at the prospects for women players. You mentioned that women's cricket is relatively highly paid, but what about that issue where women sometimes have to work part-time while they're playing cricket and kind of shuffle their lives around? That I understand that you were studying medicine but had to change degrees in order to play for Australia. Do you wish there'd been a bit more support there and flexibility so that you could have perhaps done both?
I just feel I'm so privileged to have sort of lived both experiences. I bridged the amateur to professional eras, and there was such a charm in being an amateur athlete and traveling the world with your mates. Yes, you had to take time off work and you didn't get paid to do it, but you had another life. And I'm very privileged to have gone to university and gotten an education and gone into a career path that's very interesting for me, and that's in genetic counselling. So I do hope that our professional athletes these days continue, while they're paid a lot of money, continue to focus on how they're building themselves in a nicely rounded way that can give them confidence about when they exit the sport. Because that's a really big issue these days, I think, athlete transition and how our elite athletes sort of emerge after they've had a wonderful career, whether that be long or short, to be able to then move on to the next steps. And it's very difficult at that time. I experienced that sort of shift in identity when you're no longer an Australian cricketer. Who are you? So I think it's really important that we continue to leave space for our elite athletes to be able to study. There's great options online now, and to support them in doing that. And in cricket, you can get your degree paid for now through the Australian Cricketers Association and their education grants. So there's really no excuse.
A pathway forward.
There's really great opportunities now.
Well, Alex Blackwell, you say, who are you now? Now that you're not a famous international cricketer, you're a genetic counsellor, you're an advocate, you're a commentator, and you're a writer. The memoir's called Fair Game. Alex, it's been lovely to chat to you today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Hilary.
Alex Blackwell here on Life Matters Today on Radio National.
ABC RN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.